The reading from Nectar Devotion, the first division, second chapter, the first verse number 2. We started yesterday giving the definition of sadhana bhakti. We received the definition of bhakti before. Anya bilashita shunyam gana karma niramritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. And then Rupa Goswami explained the six characteristics of bhakti. And now he's beginning the discussion of sadhana bhakti, and then bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. So this verse where he defines sadhana bhakti says, kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya bhava sad sadhana bida nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam riddhi sadhyata. When transcendental devotional service by which love for Krishna is attained, it is executed by the senses, it is called sadhana bhakti, or regulated discharge of devotional service. Such devotion eternally exists within the heart of every living entity. The awakening of this devotion is a potentiality of devotional service and practice. This is Prabhupada's translation. In other words, by practicing sadhana bhakti, one will attain bhava bhakti. How does sadhana bhakti bring about bhava bhakti? Sadhana bhakti purifies the heart, and gradually a genuine longing for Krishna's service appears. Now this is called utkanta. Utkanta means eagerness. That by doing, in the beginning we're just doing sadhana and trying to be careful to do everything right, the way we're told. Oh, you put tilak like this, and you chant like this, and there's 10 offenses, and you do puja like this, and achman like that, and you prakrama like this, and artik like this. There's so many rules and regulations, we're very careful to try to figure it all out and do it sincerely to the best of our ability to please guru and immediate authorities. And then after some time, but Krishna is so far away, I mean the actual person, Krishna, is very far away from us in the beginning of bhakti, although we're hankering for that person, and we see him every day in deity form, and we pray to him. But as we actually become purified, something arises within the heart, a longing to actually, we really want to serve him, the person, Krishna. He starts to manifest more really as a person in our lives. Krishna the person, rather than just devotional service. And we're doing devotional service, but we don't have much the personal aspect. So when we perform with this sincere mood of hankering for perfectional stage, this is called siddhi lalasa. Lalasa means hankering, and siddhi means perfection. We really want, what happens is that we may start in the beginning, or maybe after some time, we develop a keen or strong desire to actually love Krishna, to live with him, and to be in the spiritual world. This comes. It's called siddhi lalasa, a mood of hankering for a perfectional stage. And of course we see the songs of the acharyas, and they say that this mood of siddhi lalasa usually comes more in a very strong way at the level of bhava. So we see these group of songs by Narottam and Bhaktivinoda, they're called siddhi lalasa, desiring for some perfectional stage. And they're very particular, they're very exact. This song, Radha Krishna, we say, Pranamor, Yugalakishor. So there he's saying, he's also desiring for a perfectional stage. When will I attain the perfection? And my Siddha Sarup as a Nityamanjari, or Pransaki of Radharani, or Nityasaki, when will I attain the perfection of serving you, offering chandan to your body, and fanning with you with a chamara, and sitting you on a beautiful asan, in the yoga pit, and then doing this seva. So this is a desire for particular service. So this is what Prabhupada is saying in his Nectar Devotion, that sadhana has the potential to awaken bhava, but it should not be done mechanically. We must execute the limbs of bhakti with a yearning to achieve Radha and Krishna's eternal service in the groves of Vrindavan. Then when we say practice of bhakti sadhana, the word practice connotes or indicates an endeavor to acquire skills which we don't possess. But practicing devotee, this is from Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion. Or practicing bhakti uncovers something that's already present in the heart, not developing something artificial. The progress from sadhana bhakti to bhava bhakti, Prabhupada compares it to a baby's practice of walking. In other words, he has a tendency within him and then it comes out with practice. So when we practice the limbs of sadhana bhakti, it brings out or invokes our innate tendency to love Krishna. Also the doctor and the patient. The spiritual master is like a psychiatrist. He restores the patient's sanity by prescribing therapeutic behavior. In other words, we're being separated from Krishna and we're acting somewhat insane. Crazy men pursuing pleasure in the body and running around this material world, not understanding our spiritual identity. So thus the spiritual master brings out the disciple's original sane consciousness or Krishna consciousness by prescribing practices of sadhana bhakti. So then it goes on more notes. Now, I was trying to synthesize these ideas because some confusion here. When you look at this verse, kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya bhavasad sananadvida nityasidha bhavasya prakatyam riti sadhyata. So it's saying here that this nityasidha bhav is with the eternal associates of the Lord, like Rupa Mandri, Rupa Goswami, Rati Mandri, Raghunath Das Goswami, or any liberated souls in Parampara, what to speak of Radharani and the actual expansions from the Lord. They have this eternal bhav in their heart, this eternal love for Krishna in their heart. So he's saying that this becomes manifest in the heart at the level of bhava. And now what Prabhupada is saying here, it's interesting. If you look at the Nectar Devotion, I was looking this morning, he's saying that in this chapter, which is chapter 2, I lost my thing, got messed up here. He's discussing the same section. And Prabhupada is saying there are various prescribed methods for employing our senses and mind in such a way that our dormant consciousness for loving Krishna will be invoked, as much as a child with a little practice can begin to walk. And it's very interesting because I don't know if this is really as correctly presented here. The Prabhupada says the next sentence. Similarly, Krishna consciousness cannot be aroused simply by practice. Although the statements before it and after it, he's saying, I'm going to try to explain all this. He's saying that walking capacity is originally in the child. And by little practice he walks. Similarly, Krishna bhakti is the natural instinct of every living entity. So this consciousness, though dormant in those who are material contaminated, is found in every living entity. So Prabhupada is saying very clearly, as he says when he discusses Nityasiddha Krishna Prema Siddhikavanai, he says that this Krishna Prema is within the heart, in a dormant way. And he's saying the same thing here. Whereas the actual translation that even our Bhanu Swami is also saying, that Rupa Goswami is saying here in this verse, he's saying that this attained state of bhava bhakti is an eternal sthai bhava, which is not created, but simply manifests within the soul by the spiritual energy of the Lord. It says, nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam riti sadhyata. Right? So it appears in the translation that this manifests within the soul by the spiritual energy of the Lord. So I came across an interesting analogy which can kind of synthesize these two views. Because Prabhupada is basically saying it's already there, it's dormant, that our bhakti, our devotion for the Lord is already there. And Rupa Goswami seems to indicate that this Nityasiddha Bhava is not there, that it comes down and enters the soul. So Prabhupada says here, but it's very interesting because he says, after he's saying that it's there, it's dormant consciousness to our loving Krishna, then he says, but Krishna consciousness cannot be aroused simply by practice. So that means that practice of sadhana bhakti will not arouse it. Actually, there is no such practice, which is the next sentence. When we wish to develop our innate capacity for devotional service, there are certain processes by which our accepting and executing them will cause that dormant capacity to be invoked. Such is the practice of sadhana bhakti. So, apparently, as I was saying yesterday, I don't think it was recorded, but I was saying off the record or whatever, that this dormant capacity to love Krishna is like very, very practically non-existent. It's so small. It's very weak. This power, this ability to love Krishna. It's lying, you can say, all right, it's lying dormant, but unless it contacts the energy from outside, it won't manifest. As it says, prakatyam. It's very clear in the Sanskrit. It says nitya siddha bhavasya prakatyam riddhi sadyata. Manifest. For example, and this is the analogy that we saw here in this other book, which I think will help us understand. It's very interesting. And this is describing later on, in the third wave, a first section when it talks about the cause of bhava bhakti to appear. Because bhava bhakti, which Prabhupada also explains later, unless the shuddha sattva, or the pure energy, the surup shakti from the Lord or his associates, descends and enters the heart, then prema won't be brought about. So now the analogy is, a dormant seed cannot grow without being touched by the heat and light of the sun. You have a field, and there's a seed there, as we often see in Vrindavan. It's very dry and hot in the summertime. And some parts of Vrindavan, they look so parched and so dry, it looks like a desert. You see vast areas around Govardhan, it's just all sand. And if it rains for a week or something, all of a sudden out of that desert-like sand, all these things are flying up everywhere. Green plants and shrubs. Because the seeds are dormant there. But when the suitable conditions are there, the seeds manifest as sprouts and plants. So similarly, love of God, prema, is like a seed lying dormant in the heart of every living entity. It cannot grow without the touch of the Lord's own devotional energy, shuddha sattva. When a person eagerly wants to serve the Lord, the shuddha sattva potency may enter his heart through the mercy of a pure devotee. When the shuddha sattva touches the heart, prema begins to sprout, as bhava is prema in its preliminary budding state. Rupa Goswami describes it, bhava, as prem ankur, which means the first sprout of prem. This book? This is Ways of Devotion, Dhanadhara Swami. It's page 130, that discussion. So I rather like this analogy that, because sometimes, you know, different preachers, they say that it's not possible that this prema is lying dormant in the heart. Anyone who says that prema is lying dormant in the heart, he is incorrect. They say like this, other preachers in Gaudiya Sampradaya. So, in one sense, they're also correct, but being a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, I also have to see the correctness in his statements and try to synthesize the differences that are being said here, because it's Sanskrit, and Sanskrit has these words prakatyam. For example, this word, when we say nitya siddha krishna prema sadya kavanai shravanali shuddha chitta korya udai, so the word udai, sometimes udai means like chandrodaya mandir, Mayapur chandra udaya. Udai means rising, but right, it means rising and also means appearing. So sometimes when preachers of Gaudiya Vaishnava, when they're translating this verse, they say, it says, this verse shows that Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem that this Krishna prema is with the Nitya Siddhas, and that it rises, or excuse me, it appears, it will appear in the heart by when the heart is purified by Shravanadi Shuddha Chitta Koraya Udai. So they translate appear. In other words, it's not there, but it will appear in the heart by the mercy of these liberated or perfected beings. So the word Udai also means arise. In other words, the sun is already there in the sky, and by the rotation of the earth, it appears that the sun is rising, but it's not coming, it's always been there. So Prabhupada, he translates the word Udai as arise, which is fully legitimate. So he's saying that dormant within the heart of the jiva, because the jiva is Satchidananda, he's part and parcel of the Lord, so he also has ananda. But as I mentioned yesterday, it's very minute. The chit potency of the jiva is so tiny that even momentarily, which is actually only a moment, he can be covered by the external energy, this Maya Shakti, which is only a moment in eternal time. So this analogy is quite good, quite appropriate. And it's interesting that the Prabhupada is saying here that, okay, it's dormant. He's saying that love of God is dormant in the heart. But then he says, but it can't be developed by practice. So Prabhupada is agreeing that sadhana, that executing sadhana, which is what Rupa Goswami is saying, is not only by sadhana. Sadhana is not the cause of the effect of bhava, as we mentioned over and over again. In other words, it does have to come from outside. Just like the seed will not produce, the seed is lying in the ground and will not produce any fruits or anything unless something comes from outside, right? So the seed within itself, the seed has the potential to produce twigs and leaves and branches and flowers and fruit. But unless it's contacted by something from outside, it won't produce. So that outside contact is heat and light, you know, the environment. So the same way, we can say, yes, we have the dormant, as Prabhupada is saying, we have the dormant seed for love of God within our heart. And even a particular sthayibhava is already designated there per the desire of the Lord. Because everything is moving by His will and desire. So there's nothing, He doesn't leave anything unknown. So there are a number of thousands of millions of jivas are expanded from Mahavishnu. And they have he designates them with his particular way he wants to serve them, or wants them to serve him. Just like a master may have so many servants, and 100 people come to his house and he hires them all. They're all lined up, 100 people. He says, okay, you 4 men be the chauffeurs, you be the chokidar, you be the cleaners, you be the this, that. So he assigns them all their posts and positions, and they execute them. So in the same way, every jiva has his assigned seva. But when he glances towards the external energy, then that seva gets covered. And it comes in this side. Because that's his independence. Krishna created us with that independence to see what we would do. Create some fun. And then, of course, it's his fun, but we may not think so. But then he comes and follows us and tries to bring us, turn our faces the other way. Krishna Mukh, Antarmukh. So this is, if we read very closely or scrutinizingly in Srila Prabhupada's books, you'll see how he's also agreeing with Rupa Goswami by saying, yes, that we must be touched by something outside, and that outside factor is called Sarup Shakti, the Sarup Shakti of the Lord. In this particular case, is Bhava Bhakti or Vishuddha Sattva, is a combination of Lajini and Samvit, knowledge potency and the bliss potency or love potency. So unless that potency comes down and mixes with our heart, and that will have to come down from Guru or any perfected being that we're worshipping in the line of our parampara or Rupa Goswami or Raghunath Das or Radharani herself or any direct associate of the Lord, they must shine the light and heat of their bhava onto our heart. Then, otherwise, as Prabhupada said, the Krishna consciousness, which when we mean Krishna consciousness, we mean bhava bhakti and prema bhakti, cannot be aroused simply by practice. Actually, there is no such practice. When we wish to develop our innate capacity for bhakti, in other words, we wish to bring that seed in our heart, that dormant seed, if we wish to bring it to fruition, then, he says, there are certain processes that we can accept and execute them. It will cause that dormant capacity to be invoked. In other words, we'll invoke the mercy of the liberated souls by engaging in sadhana bhakti. And we please them, yasya prasada and bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagadikatopi. And they're pleased, by their mercy, then we'll actually attain this manifest potential of the jiva. Or unmanifest, rather, potential of the jiva. So that's how I would like to explain it. To be in harmony with Srila Prabhupada's teachings. A dormant seed cannot grow without being touched by the heat and light of the sun. So if you say that there's no prema there and it comes from outside, or you say there's dormant prema and it still has to come from outside, both are the same thing is being said, basically. That, in other words, on our own, we cannot attain Krishna prema, which Prabhupada is saying. This is a very key thing. Krishna consciousness cannot be aroused simply by practice. Practice means sadhana. This is page 20 of Nectar Devotion. So this contact, and then other people say that, other preachers say there's no prema in the heart. There's no prema in the heart of the jiva. There's no bhav there. He's only existing. He's only sandini. He's just existing. And so, as far as we can understand, this doesn't make sense to us from what we understand from Gita. That if you're part and parcel of Krishna, how can you be less? As we've heard time and again, that we're minute, the jivas are minute, but they're Satchitananda. So this, we accept this viewpoint. But you can see, we try to find a thread of similarity in different, rather than generally in preaching. Most preachers try to create an us and them situation. You know, they try to divide and conquer. Well, in ISKCON they teach this. Well, in Gaudiya Math we teach that, or the Babaji teach this or that. But rather than dividing and conquering, let's try to find the synthesis. There's a thesis, the antithesis, and the synthesis. Right? The argument and the opposition, and then the harmony. So where are the points of agreement? The points of agreement are that whether it's dormant love or there's no love, somehow we have to become tanmoy and surrender to the liberated perfected beings and act and behave in such a way by executing sadhana bhakti that Krishna and his liberated devotees become pleased to bestow their mercy on us. Like, the bottom line is, it's all mercy. To put it simply, it's in four letters, KRPA, Kripa. It's only this, nothing else. And if you don't do anything, you can also attain perfection maybe after, 50 million lifetimes. You do nothing and you may get the Kripa, get the honorary degree from Oxford. But you may pass many, many lifetimes and not get recognized. So Rupa Goswami, all the enlightened acharyas, they're encouraging us to try to behave nicely and act nicely and go in this direction. So we could pause here for any questions. It's a rather delicate topic. Yes?
You just now mentioned that it's creep and we have to be surrendered to the perfect being. So, and the perfect being...
Not exactly surrendered, they're actually doing bhajan in align with them.
Yeah. So my question, if spiritual master is not perfect, but he is engaging person, disciple, in a sadhana, in a practice, so, but it is said that just by practicing you can attain. So if someone didn't attain yet, but he's practicing, and he will engage his follower also in the practicing, but he cannot give him any of that special kripa, but he is engaging in the process. So
If the teacher is actually engaging the students in following properly, with the right, you know, yearning. They're actually developing their longing and yearning, and that's what raga is about. They're actually awakened some type of attachment or for serving Krishna in a personal, specific way. If the teacher can bring out that mood in the student, and then actually line them up, or you can say connect them with the liberated perfect beings, and those perfect beings that can, it's not that they just depend. Because you see so many parampara lines, if you look at Diksha parampara lines, from Advaita Sampradaya, Nityananda, etc., you see so many imperfect links there. So many persons that were not very good in behavior, and they were simply the sons or daughters of their father that was the guru, who was the son of his father who was a guru. Because usually they're jati gosais. Advaita's sons, Nityananda's sons, like this. And then their sons and their sons and their sons, called jati gosai, a family of Goswamis. In many cases there are many deviants and fallen people in the line. So then if you say that this perfection is coming down through parampara, then what happens when there's some deviant in the line? Then a perfection jumps over, and then the next person can be perfect. And it's a fact. You'll see many lines where someone in that line will actually be defective. But then the next one down, or two people after that, they're liberated siddhas. So this is showing, this is part of the basis of why Siddhanta Saraswati presented this Bhagavat parampara concept. Because even in the established lines of parampara, there are breaks in terms of the perfection of the acharyas in the line. But yet, even after that break, there are acharyas that are perfect and siddha. So it's almost like a fire is going down, burning all the houses. Then a fire jumps over that house and burns the other houses. This often happens in a forest fire. A fire jumps over some tree. It burns 20 trees in a line and lets one tree go. It's some independent nature. So the guru himself, he may not be that bhava bhakta, but if he teaches the disciple how to link up with these liberated perfected beings and they teach them the proper method of bhajan, and they surrender, then that's why it's said that often it says a disciple can go beyond the spiritual master. He can actually, if the spiritual master is only madhyam, he's on a level of nishtha madhyam, which is a very like borderline beginning of being a guru. It's accepted like that. That's why Rupa Goswami says one should be careful to take one that has the most adhikara. Adhikara means actual qualification. Uttam adhikara means the qualification of practice bhakti. He says you should be careful because you get insufficient guidance. But if the disciple is linked up with the Nitya Parishads and doing bhajan properly, and seva sadaka rupena, siddha rupena, of course siddha rupa won't be there, but seva sadaka rupena, he's actually in his sadaka rup properly worshipping and serving Rupa Mandri and Rupa Goswami, then they themselves will benedict that disciple with all the perfection. Because they've approached the lotus feet, they've approached the lotus feet of Rupa Goswami through the prescribed method, which is Guru Parashraya. Rupa Goswami is saying, Guru Parashraya, living guru, take shelter of a living guru, surrender to him and render service, Vishrambena Guru Seva. So that's the proper approach. Now you have your card. You have your entrance card. You have permission. No permission, no admission. So now you have the entrance card. Now you have access with that internet connection. You have access to all the different websites or whatever they call it. So now you've gone through proper bona fide guru parampara. Then now you have access to worshipping the lotus feet of the Nitya Siddhas, Nitya Siddha Bhavasya, like Rupa and Rati. And they can accept you and bless you and benedict you. This is basically how I understand it.
So some gurus can give personally to disciple perfection.
Naturally.
Some guru can teach how to properly approach other previous acharyas.
That's why it always says everything comes through guru. Guru is linking you with the liberated souls, or he is himself. That's what Rupa Goswami, that's best. Rupa Goswami says it's best if your guru is right in front of you. Then everything is direct. and not manifested. Prakatyam, this is Prakatyam, really, it's like very nice. It says right here in the verse, it says, Prakatyam Vridhi Sadhyata. Prakatyam Vridhi Sadhyata, that the Sadhya, the goal is actually manifest in the heart. The Sadhya means the goal. In other words, you can't attain the Sadhya on our own endeavor. That's why Prabhupada says any amount of sadhana is very nice. Page 20. It says, Krishna consciousness cannot be aroused simply by practice. So you can do so much sadhana bhakti for millions of lifetimes, but unless Vishuddha sattva comes down, the sword of Shakti comes down from the parishads and mixes with our heart and ignites our dormant love for Krishna, or manifest love for Krishna with it, shaver what. Either way it works, we won't attain Bhav and Prem. Actually, there is no such practice. Which is, when we wish to develop our innate capacity for bhakti, we have an innate capacity, but has to be developed. How is it developed? Well, we try and we practice sadhana, and then that positions us, that puts us in a position to receive it. In other words, if the seed, for example, if the seed is 300 meters down in the ground, you dig a hole 100 meters in the ground, put a mango seed. Well, when will it make a tree and fruits? Never. Because it's the sunlight, the heat of the earth, is so cold down there, 300 feet down. So the heat and the water that's required, that will not penetrate, not reach that level. But if you bring the seed up and bring it like 6 inches below the earth, then in the summertime it'll get warm and the rains will fall, and then that will soften the seed coat, and then the heat will heat it, and then all of a sudden it'll start sprouting. So sadhana is like that. This bhakti, bhava, prem, this dormant tendency to love God in a specific way is very deep. Deep in the caverns of our heart. It's very deep, it's like 300 meters down under the ground. So doing sadhana bhakti elevates the seed, brings it up closer and closer and closer to the surface of our heart. So the heat and light of the liberated souls, of their Surupa Shakti, can shine there and have effect to bring about the manifestation of our dormant love of God. This analogy is very nice. Love of God is like a seed lying dormant in the heart of every living entity. It cannot grow without the touch of the Lord's own devotional energy, Shuddha Sattva. When a person eagerly wants to serve the Lord, the Shuddha Sattva potency may enter his heart through the mercy of a pure devotee. Right? Rupa Goswami is a pure devotee, or Bhaktivinoda Swami is a pure devotee, or Bhaktisiddhanta, or Bhaktivinoda, or our own Gurudev, whomever that may be. And then what will happen? When Shuddha Sattva touches the heart, prema begins to sprout. As bhava is prema in its preliminary budding state. Premankur. Anything else about this subject? Manjari?
I just had my own thoughts. Which is that you got, as you said, Sanskrit. From the same Sanskrit verse, you can get so many different readings. And these readings come from the level of one's own realization. So on something like this, I would feel that it all just comes down to the inner heart feeling.
Faith.
Yes, of the aspiring devotee.
In the teacher. Who's saying whatever he's saying?
Well, also in the aspiring devotee, because the teacher is saying this, but it needs to also have effect in the heart of the practicing devotee, aspiring devotee. So you have all these different approaches, but then the ultimate.
Which one works for you? Yeah.
Yeah, and the ultimate says it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's what matters is what approach.
Connects you.
And brings out this feeling in the heart.
Yeah, how you can, whose sound vibration can bring you to the point of moving towards Krishna and doing some type of bhakti and some type of surrender, that you should follow. That's the main, which is basically faith. Because I've been, because naturally I've been hearing over 30 years my own Guru Maharaj's explanation of these different verses with his translation, understanding, and obviously we have our full faith there. But then we've also heard other preachers, very capable and qualified preachers of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, present slightly different versions of these same verses. But because my faith and heart are on one side, then it's very hard for me to place my faith and heart on another side. But we do try to see with our own intelligence, try to see, as I said, see the synthesis. And like some people say, oh, you should chant 64 rounds a day. And someone else says you chant 16. So the synthesis is both are saying chant. Both are saying that you should chant the Maha Mantra, but one is emphasizing more or less. And the one who's telling you should chant 16, he's telling that. If you come to him 10 years later, he might say, so now you chant 64. You know, in other words, the teacher is also free to modify his instruction. It's not a one-time instruction for all time. And oftentimes we don't even hear it correctly. I mean, Prabhupada actually said we should chant 16 rounds minimum. But you'll hear preachers in ISKCON, they'll say, Prabhupada said that 16 rounds is enough. They very convincingly and boldly say, Prabhupada said you only have to chant 16 rounds a day. That's all. Who said this 64 round? This is my, you know, and they try to make a big politics about it. But the actual fact is, on numerous occasions, Prabhupada said, in initiations, he's saying, what are the four regular principles? So you promise to chant 16 rounds a day, and the disciple, or whatever, candidate says, yes, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, and that's the minimum. You hear with his own words, he's saying, that's the minimum. Actually, you should always be chanting. And then the disciple says, I'll try, Prabhupada. I'll try. Little squeaky voice. You know. I'll try. Well, I remember he's initiating one lady. She was married. She said, so you promised to chant 16 rounds a day? And she said, yes, Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said, even if your child is crying? Even if your child is crying, you promise? Yes, Prabhupada. So she's thinking, how does Prabhupada know that sometimes I don't chant because my baby's giving me too much trouble? So this is it's where our faith lies. We have to deposit our faith in someone. I always often tell students, we've had many students over the years, and they went their different ways, you know, as water seeks its own level. They went their different ways to find their initiations here and there. And I always told them, I said, try to find some path, find a path of self-realization you believe in, you really believe in, and put your heart into it. And find someone on the path that knows that path that you can surrender to. And then accept that path and follow that teacher and see where you go. Because when you meet many people, they would come and they were trying a little Vipassana yoga and a little bit of this and a little bit of that, then trying bhakti, many people from Europe. And then I said, listen, try to find some path like this. So same in the bhakti mark. We find some presentation of Gaudiya Vedanta which appeals to us, which we can put our heart into, and find some exemplars or teachers on that path whom we can instill our faith in, and then surrender and follow the path and follow the teacher and see where it gets you. And really follow it. That's really the problem, is most people don't follow. They give a half-baked effort and say, well, I tried it. And you bake the cake halfway or bake the bread halfway and say, oh, look, this recipe's no good. It's just sitting there in a pan like this, there's a big bunch of flour. It's not going anywhere. And you take it out and you just throw it out that pan. It's called half-baked. Because at a certain point, it looks like nothing's happening. All of a sudden, it starts the bread starts growing up and expanding and becoming over the top of the pan sometimes. It gets a little mushroom-type thing on it, you know, goes around the top. So, and bhakti is like that. You're cooking and cooking and cooking and getting hotter and hotter and hotter, but nothing's happening. It seems like nothing's happening. And then you jump off, oh, this this guru is no good, or this path is no good, or these books are no good. And then they try going in another oven. And then you get pressure cooked over there. And then you say, oh wow, this oven's not very good either. Now you just decide to make your own earth oven. make your own oven and become your own guru. That happens so many times, actually. I've seen. Like Prabhupada would say, you ask some servant, say, who's your master? And the person say, oh, everyone's my master. I see everyone as my master. And Prabhupada said, he said, a servant of all is a servant of none. In other words, we must have one master that we can serve and see what happens. Because there's some magic in surrender, but that to realize that magic requires a full intensity of surrender, which is not easy to manifest, no doubt. Easy to talk about, but not so easy to manifest. Because ultimately, as Manjari was saying, that behind everything is Krishna, and he's one. Krishna is only one, and love of God is only one, and there's only one spiritual world. Radha and Krishna are one and also two. But there seems to be so much unlimited brain-cracking variety to approach the one, that one spiritual world and that one divine couple. There's so much opposition, even in our own house. Our own house of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, there's so much opposition. At any rate, we should go forward. So continuing with the teachings of Rupa Goswami from the Nectar of Devotion. Is there any more discussion on this point? Prakash, you have your understanding? Because this verse, which was written first in 1560 or 54, whenever this book was written, and later in 1590, when Krishnas Kaviraj, or was 1600, whatever it was, when he was writing Chaitanya Charitamrita, obviously he was studying all the books of the six Goswamis, and he had directly met Rupa Goswami, I believe so. Maybe he came here a little bit after he left. But he's summarizing the teachings of Rupa Goswami in his Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this same verse appears there. This is the same concept as this verse, Kriti Sadhya Bhavet Sadhya Bhava Sa Saranabhida Nitya Siddhasya Bhavasya Prakatyam Vridhi Sadhyata. That Uttam Bhakti, when translated into practice through the senses and organs of the body, and which being so practiced brings on the manifestation of Bhava Bhakti in the heart of the individual, is called Sadhana Bhakti. So this verse is parallel to the verse Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kavanai Shravanadi Shudachite Koraya Udai. That this prema arises in the heart, manifests in the heart, appears in the heart. When the chitta or heart is purified by the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna, then this Nityasiddha prema, or this prema that's in the heart of the Nityasiddha, is however, whatever, it manifests in the heart. So the basic idea is we are dependent at every stage of the game. And that is the very nature of the jiva, dependent. Declaring our dependence on God is one article, 1976, in the Bhaktivedanta magazine. Because America was celebrating her 200 years of independence, July 4th, 1776 to July 4th, 1976. So everyone's saying, independence, independence, and waving flags and setting up firecrackers. 200 years, like we have Republic Day in India. Or you have Independence Day also. One is January 15th and one is...
August
15th. So that means independence from Britain, like 1947. That was August 15th?
Yes, sir.
Hmm. Anyway... So we got also, America got independent from Britain also. At least I thought so. So the Prophet says, this is a joke, there's no independence, everyone's dependent. We're dependent every moment on God. So that, since that's our eternal, that is our, everyone's eternal nature. No matter, we're dependent on Krishna in the material world, we're totally dependent on God for anything and everything. For our sustenance, for our nourishment, for our maintenance. And now we enter the spiritual dimension, spiritual circle, we're also totally dependent on God for our nourishment, for our maintenance, for our protection, for everything, isn't it? You see, so where is it? Where is the choice? Where is the chance for independence? Always there's dependence. We're dependent on Guru. We're dependent on the mercy coming down. So this is, and when we realize this, this is one of the six symptoms of surrender, feeling oneself dependent on the Lord. So this is text 3. Sabhakti Saptama Skande Bhangya Devar Shinodita. Maybe I read this. This is Narada addressing Yudhisthira in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam. He's saying, it's chapter 1, text 26. As the Lord is never perturbed, even by abuse and ill speaking about himself, if one fixes one's mind on the Lord, either with animosity or without animosity, out of fear or from affection, or from desire for self-enjoyment or self-gratification, one realizes the Lord in accordance with the nature of one's mind fixation on the Lord. Well, this is a famous verse. It's called Kamadvesha. It talks about how one can attain the Lord. This is a very often quoted verse, how one can attain the Lord even from lust or greed or whatever. And the bottom line is that it's based on absorption. That Vena, King Vena, he was very angry with the Lord, but he was only time to time angry with the Lord and just abusing him and saying, why are you Brahmins worshipping God? I'm God. Just worship me. I'm the emperor. Worship me. So then they said, then the Brahmin said, you be quiet or we're going to finish you off. He said, what can you do? You can't do anything. So then they chanted some mantras and they killed him. So Venu is cited as an example of someone who, he was angry, had so much anger toward the Lord, but it was only time to time he would get angry whenever someone mentioned the Lord. He was not every moment absorbing his mind in the Lord. Whereas someone like Kamsa was out of fear. Bayam is also there. Kamadvesha Bayam Snehad. It's called Kamadvesha Bayam Snehad. Out of affection, out of fear. So out of anger is Jarasand. Jarasand was so much envious and envious of the Lord and angry with the Lord, like Venu. But he was always thinking of the Lord. In fact, they say from Jarasand when he was first born, when he was a baby, when he was first born, Shishupal. When Shishupal is first born, when he's a baby, the first word he says, Krish, 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 Krish. He was saying that with a negative dialect, like damn this guy, you know. Even as soon as he was a baby, he was saying, Krish, 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 Krish. And he was absorbed in thinking of Krishna from babyhood. And then just saying all bad things about Krishna. Just thinking. And what happened was every time he said something bad, it was kind of like rolling in the mud and then running under a shower. You roll in the dirt and you run under and jump in a bathtub and roll in the dirt. So every time he said something bad, because his mind was always fixed on Krishna, then the sin of that bad statement was being exonerated or washed away. So what happened was that his absorption in thinking of Krishna was greater than his speaking. Because a lot of times he wasn't saying anything bad, but he was just thinking, oh, this Krishna, I want to kill him. And Krishna, 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 Krishna. So all that thinking purified his mind. So in the end, he was awarded by the Lord, killed by the Lord, and absorbed, and he had Surupya Mukti. Whereas Venu just simply went to hell. He's also angry. He said, God is a demon. He's a son of a this, that. So many things. And then he was just killed by the Brahmins and went to hell. And we never heard anything more about him. But, you know, Shishupal had such a glorious, you know, demise. So this, let's see, this verse, maybe they quote this in the purport here. Kind of hard going back and forth, these two books, can't get track. Yeah, this is from the seventh canto, verse 1. It says, Tasmad vairanu bandena nirvairena bayenava snehat kamena vadyunjat kantanchin nikshate pritak. By enmity, this means vairena, by vaidhi bhakti, that means without envy, by fear, bhayam, by affection, sneha, or by lusty desire, by all of these, or by any one of them, if a conditioned soul somehow or other concentrates his mind on the Lord, the result is the same. For the Lord, because of his blissful position, is never affected by enmity or friendship. So in this verse, fear and hatred are also mentioned. If these two are considered bhakti, then there is a contradiction to the definition already given, that bhakti should be with favorable intentions. Anukulyena. Remember we said anukulya means to be favorable. Therefore, for describing these items, the author uses the word bhangya, which means along with something resembling bhakti. Since Krishna grants auspiciousness, even when persons show fear or envy towards him, who would not worship the Lord? Indeed, he has given results even to the lowest persons by some arrangement. That is the meaning of the statement. And it's, so one must concentrate the mind. So the main point is the concentration of the mind. That's what the Lord is reciprocates with that. Because he's so kind that you're fixing your mind on me. And Krishna tells that in Gita, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me. Right? Man manava madbhakto. So he's angry, so he's thinking. So then the Lord reciprocates with that mind. Your mind is fixed on me. You're saying any damn thing, all these wrong things. But you're always thinking of me. So I'll overlook these things and accept your thoughts, that your mind is fixed on me. So this is how it works. So this is that Subhakti Satamaskande Bhangya Devashi. So now he's talking about that bhakti ultimately means fixing the mind on the Lord. As he says, as the Lord is never... I said that. One realizes the Lord in accordance with the nature of one's mind fixation on the Lord. But this is not pure bhakti of the highest type, as it is inconsistent with the conception of uttam bhakti, which must be agreeable to the Lord. In other words, uttam bhakti is the type of bhakti that brings us to braj. It means braj bhakti, ultimately. And so if someone is thinking like Shishupal, and so much envy and anger towards the Lord, he didn't attain braj. You know, he attained in Vaikuntha. So it wasn't really favorable. The elucidation of pure bhakti has been referred to here in a roundabout way. What is really stressed in this reference is that even where interest in the Lord is dictated by feelings of animosity, fear, affection, or desire for self-gratification or self-enjoyment, and with mental absorption, the Lord ignores the actuating motives behind the interest in the Lord and considering the simple fact of their mental absorption in Him bestows on them sayujya mukti and other boons according to the way in which they fix their mind on His person. So that's what I was saying. The Lord overlooks it. Oh, I'm telling in Gita, always think of me. So you're always thinking of me. Shishupal is always thinking of me. He's following Gita. But then, so he got this kind of mukti. He didn't get braj mukti, or going to braj. This shows that the mere fact of mind fixation of the Lord brings on the Lord's grace, even when there is determining motive is something different from bhakti in the Lord for his own sake. So their motive is selfish, it's basically selfish, so it's not really anukulya, it's not favorable for the Lord. Nevertheless, so it's not really bhakti in its proper sense, avutam bhakti as we defined it, but it's a type of bhakti, bhakti abhas, a reflection of bhakti. And the Lord is so merciful, he accepts it. Okay, I'm not going to live with you. You're not the kind of guy I want to live with, Shishupal. In my own place, in my own home, I'm not going to bring you to Vrindavan and intimately interact with you. But I'll give you some place. I have so many places up here in Vaikuntha. I'll give you some place over there, and you can carry on over there. I'll reward you for your good thoughts, but I won't get too close to you. So that's basically what Krishna is doing. Therefore, Jiva Goswami points out that if this be the case, one even extraneous interest in the Lord can bring on the Lord's beneficent grace on the individual. What must be the case when there is genuine interest in the service of the Lord for his own sake, which is Uttam Bhakti? This being the intrinsic nature of the Lord, is there anybody who is so base, that means like low, as to prefer the ways of animosity and fear to that of Uttam Bhakti in the Lord for the Lord's pleasure? So Rupa Goswami is citing this, that even if you're a demon, you're a demon and trying to kill the Lord, you're actually, Shishupala is trying to kill the Lord, right? But because the Lord overlooks, oh, you're trying to kill me, that's all right. Like Putana, right? Putana, she's trying to kill the Lord. She came with poison to kill the Lord. But because she presented herself as a mother, and one Acharya says, because she dressed as a gopi, the Krishna so much likes gopis, that just because she dressed up in her gopi dress, like sometimes, like yesterday, that lady Deepika, you know, Abhishek, what is it? Abhijit, her husband, they went over to Terakodamba, and she had her gopi dress. I said, oh, what's this dress? She says, a gopi dress. It was like skirt and whatever, three-piece thing. I thought, so some acharyas say that Putana, that just because she came into Braj wearing a gopi dress, Krishna looked and said, oh, you're wearing gopi dress? Okay, I'll treat you like gopi. He just overlooked everything. And you're coming like my mother. So he elevated her and gave her the position of a datri, of a nurse, an assistant to Yashoda in the spiritual world. So who can understand the unfathomable mercy of the Lord? You come to kill him, and he gives you such a position. So the idea of telling this is not to encourage us to come to kill the Lord. We should not join the Putana Sampradaya, or just dress up in a sari and, you know, say all bad things like Shishupal. Wear a sari and start saying, Krishna, you dirty dog, this, that. No, we should rather carry on whatever position we're in and try to lovingly serve the Lord. But so much power and benefit is there in sadhana bhakti. So this is the what Rupa Goswami is trying to tell here is the power. This verse, I suppose, would we heard about the characteristics of bhakti, the definition of bhakti, the characteristics. Now we're finding about sadhana bhakti, because this is where we are, or some of us are, all of us are. So Rupa Goswami is trying to tell, just see the power of the sadhana bhakti, which I'm about to tell you. Before, in other words, he wants to whet our appetites. He's very, very systematically presenting everything. So now we're going to tell you about sadhana bhakti. But before we tell you, let me tell you how powerful it is. So we'll stop there. If there's any questions or comments. Sometimes people even ask a question, well, can I be a demon? It's a lot easier to be a demon than be a devotee. Let me just be a demon and think of Krishna all the time. But what happens when you become a demon in this world, you forget Krishna. Not too many people can be like Shishupal. Since he was Jaya Vijaya, he had some advantage. Yes?
This is totally different question. Like you said, people who are envious of Krishna. So, Guru Maharaj, like, there are so many caste and creed on this planet, Maharaj, like Muslims are there, Christians are there. So, when they speak against the philosophy of against the philosophy of Krishna consciousness or anybody, so that means they're envious of Krishna. That's why they can't accept it, or it's
Obviously they're envious of Krishna or envious of God. Although they say that they're godly. Because one who has actual realization of God, then he'll see his hand in everything. He'll see how everyone is worshipping the Lord and serving the Lord according to the modes of nature they're in. This is described in Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That one who actually understands God, who will understand how people are worshipping and serving according to their position in the modes of nature. There's tamasic dharma and rajasic dharma and sattvic dharma. And then there's pure dharma. It's called Jiva Dharma. It's called Sanatana Dharma. There's Asad Dharma, or temporary dharmas, and there's eternal dharma. So this comes with knowledge. One has broad vision. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmanika Vihashtani Shunicheva Subhake Cha Pandita Samadarshana. One who is a pandit has Samadarshan. So a religious person who realizes God, he becomes a pandit. He becomes learned, wise man, rabbi. Right? They say rabbi, and the Jews have rabbis. And then the Muslims have the kafir. What do they call it? Not kafir, but mullah. What do they call it? Mullah. The mullah. Sometimes they call money mullah. Where's the mullah? So these are, in other words, the learned people. So any learned religious person, whether they're official, have an official position or not, they'll be samadarshan. They'll be equal vision. They will see, oh yes, Hindus are serving God, Muslims are serving God, Christians are serving God, Buddhists are serving God, and their own, according to their own viewpoint, due to the contamination or the prevalence of the different modes of nature. But the purest conception of God is to love God. So religion, Prabhupada always says, religion means to love God. So we're not asking anyone to change their religion from Christian to Muslim to Hindu. We're asking everyone to love God. Muhammad taught love of God, Jesus taught love of God, Chaitanya taught love of God. But who's following? Are the Hindus following loving God? No. Christians? No. Muslims? No. So everyone's just backbiting and trying to criticize each other. So that has nothing to do with religious viewpoint. It has everything to do with material envy based on caste and creed. So it's all just permutations of envy. So they're not. So that envy is not going to award them liberation because they're not absorbed in God. They're absorbed in making money and selling their oil. And every once in a while they say, oh, these Hindus, I hate them, I'll kill all these Hindus. They're all kafirs. So that's okay, they say that, but that doesn't mean 24 hours a day they're absorbed in God. Shishupal, 24 hours a day meditating in God, and so was Kamsa. So that absorption purified them. But just momentary absorption is not going to do it. Anything else?
Sometimes people make offense, like they might say that, oh, your Krishna consciousness is all rubbish and you're too rubbish.
Hogwash. Your Krishna consciousness is a bunch of BS. Hogwash. You take your Krishna and go somewhere.
So just the chanting Krishna or remembering Krishna in that small period, also they're benefiting us.
What, by speaking badly about Krishna, by the saying Krishna? Any contact with the holy name is beneficial, but it may be about a million lifetimes before they get they harvest that benefit.
But then the offense is greater than also?
No, nothing is greater than Krishna. Offense is temporary, Krishna is eternal. Krishna's name is eternal. So everything's adjusted. It's pap and punya. You have to pay for your pap and you have to harvest your and enjoy your punya. So they chant Krishna's name, that goes in their good account. And so that good account, when it accumulates, then they get sadhusanga. And then when they do the bad things, then they have to pay for that also. And there's different hellish planets. You can read in fifth canto, where did the offenders of God go? They go and they crush between some rollers and things like that. They become like sugar cane. You ever see that in the fifth canto? The people that offend the knock off the devotees on Sankirtan. It shows a picture of some policemen. One part of the picture is some policemen, and they're like boxing the ears of some Sankirtan devotee. You know, they're like hitting him on the head with a stick. Then the next picture next to it shows the guy going through some rollers like a piece of sugar cane, getting juice, squeeze the juice out of the guy, you know. Juice bar. Asura juice bar. Asura Ras. Get a little juice. So it's like this.